of smiles here in the Wigmore Hall. Smiles of wonder at that terrific display of technical virtuosity from Marc-André Hamelin's left hand. That was Chopin's revolutionary etude, Opus 10, number 12, as arranged for the left hand only by Leopold Godowsky, as his study after Chopin's etudes, number 22. Before that, we heard number 44, number 13, and number 2 from Godowsky's set of Chopin tapes. And at the very beginning of that set, Marc-André Hamelin's own completion of an unfinished Godowsky sketch after Chopin's Nouvelle Etude number 1. That was its UK premiere. We'll be back at the same time next week with the Califax Reed Quintet. Join me then, music by Copeland, Britten, Gershwin, and Weill. But now time to hand you on to Broadcasting House.
The Radio 3 lunchtime concert was introduced by Sarah Moore-Peach, and she'll be back at 4 o'clock this afternoon with the choir. We'll be finding out about an initiative by singers to mark Peace Day. This is Radio 3. It's a couple of minutes after 2 o'clock, and time for the early music show and the final part in Sophie Yates's series of programmes marking the 250th anniversary of the death of Rameau.
I've always been inspired by playing antique harpsichords. Their characters, in terms of both sound and touch, are so much more individual than modern instruments. And excitingly, they speak directly to us from the time when the music was written. The sound of a fine old instrument can take on a quality only bestowed by age, just like a vintage wine. It's fascinating to think who might have played the instrument during its long life, and how they might have played, as, despite our efforts to study the performance practice of past ages, there must be things we can't know. It's as if old instruments might harbour these secrets, and to a certain extent, show us the way. With modern harpsichords, a variety of technical approaches will work, just because the instruments are newly made and robust. But antique instruments need to be played with sensitivity to their quirks and idiosyncrasies to get the best out of them. I find that demand can stimulate ideas on both technical and musical issues that otherwise I would never have thought of. This programme is a recital I gave last week at Hatchin's Park, commemorating the 250th anniversary of Rameau's death. And as you've just heard, we began with an introduction to Rameau from his older contemporary, Antoine Fouqueré. The practice of creating musical portraits was well established in the Baroque period, and especially in France, where pièces de caractère was so fashionable. This descriptive genre became a way in which composers were able to pay homage, flatter their patrons, or occasionally satirise a fellow musician or rival in relative safety. After all, it's possible to interpret a piece of music in many different ways. Fouqueré's portrait of Rameau opens with a dramatic gesture, using the harpsichord's rich lower registers, since, like all his works, this piece was originally written for the bass viol. Rhythmically austere, it summons up Rameau's apparently didactic and inflexible nature. The second half brings to mind the rich harmonic language for which Rameau is notorious, and allows Fouqueré to commemorate and subtly poke fun at his young rival. Next, I play three movements from Rameau's Pièce de Clavecin en Concert, published 8 years after his first opera. La Livrée is a tombeau, or lament, in homage to the Comte de Livrée, a recently deceased benefactor. L'Agaçante, the irritating one, is wonderfully comic in its depiction of that mood, although sadly we don't know the identity of the person described. And La Timide is a pair of rondeaux, the first living up to its name, while the second has an orchestral texture and shows Rameau's innovative ideas on harmony in full flow.
Thank you.
The Cobb Collection is a treasure trove of over 40 early keyboard instruments brought together by the designer and artist Alec Cobb and housed in the lovely setting of Hatchins Park in Surrey. Around half the collection contains instruments once owned by composers or their patrons, whilst the other half consists of exceptional instruments in their own right, spanning 200 years of fine harpsichord and piano making. It's wonderful to see and hear these instruments in a domestic context, and the jewel in the crown of the collection is the Rooker's Hemsch harpsichord we're hearing today. The Rooker's family of Antwerp dominated harpsichord making for over 100 years, their instruments being the most highly prized throughout Europe, even long after their maker's death. The Rooker's sound and style were frequently emulated and sometimes faked by other makers in an attempt to cash in on the brand's reputation. As musical fashions changed and composers began writing larger scale music, those lucky enough to own Rookers often had them enlarged. This is the case with this instrument. The celebrated Henri Hemsch used only pieces of other Rooker's harpsichords to enlarge this one, retaining its integrity, but adding his own expertise at the same time. Hemsch was working in Paris, and as well as making harpsichords, he also looked after instruments in fashionable salons such as that of Rameau's patron, Monsieur Riche de la Pouplinière. So it's likely they would have met. And intriguingly possible that Rameau himself might have played this very instrument. It's clear from Rameau's theoretical writings how much emphasis he placed on harmony, but melody is also very important in his harpsichord music. The opening Allemande in the suite in E minor, which you're about to hear, contains a beautiful, long melodic line, as does the final piece, La Villageoise. In between, we have a rhythmically complex courante, the descriptive Le Rappel des Oiseaux, and the pastoral Gigue, Rigaudon, Musette and Tambourin. The drones in these pieces create a picturesque, bucolic scene straight from a Watteau painting.
Thank you.
Composers have been making transcriptions of their most popular works as long as keyboard instruments have existed. Creating a keyboard version of an otherwise inaccessible work was a very good way of stimulating interest among the music-loving public in the days before recorded sound. And this is exactly what Rameau was doing with his solo edition of Les Indes Galantes. The opera had a mixed reception when it was first performed, with audiences reluctant to accept the new harmony and long recitatives. In his keyboard transcription, Rameau kept the most popular sections and left out the more contentious scenes in an effort to make the music more acceptable to the Paris audience. An advantage of the keyboard is that one player can evoke an orchestral palette of sound. Nonetheless, a composer needs to be extremely artful in recasting the colours and textures of a group of instruments so they can be understood when played by just two hands. Rameau reused harpsichord solos in his operas and created two versions of the pièce de clavecin concert for solo and ensemble, seeming to make these transitions of scale with ease. Les Indes Galantes has tender songs sounding as natural on the harpsichord as the tumbling scales of the purely instrumental numbers. Throughout his life, Rameau kept coming back to the principles of the judgment of the ear and good taste. These ideas, coupled with his own unique genius, must surely be what keeps his music sounding so fresh and captivating to us today.
La Villageoise from Rameau's Pièce de Clavecin, played by Sophie Yates, and bringing to an end her series of programmes marking the 250th anniversary of Rameau's death. This is BBC Radio 3. Now, Sarah Moore-Peach has joined me in the Radio 3 studio to talk about her programme The Choir at 4 o'clock this afternoon. And I gather, Sarah, today is a special day for choirs.
It is a very special day indeed, Jill. I've just had a fantastic time out in the World Piazza, out the front of Broadcasting House, with a special event. We at Radio 3's The Choir decided we needed to take part in a new initiative called One Day, One Choir, which is for International Peace Day, which is today. So choirs around the globe are singing. We'll have Jane Hansen, whose idea it was, in the studio talking to us about it later. And some of the performances that have just happened live, we've recorded and we'll be broadcasting some extracts from them. And the whole thing will be available on the website as well. So we're being peaceful and singing today on the programme.
Excellent. And we'll be joining you at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Well, it's just after three now, and time for this week's broadcast of Choral Vespers on the feast of St Hildegard of Bingen, Abbess and Doctor of the Church. It was recorded earlier this month in Neresheim Abbey in southern Germany with the Royal Academy of Music Chamber Choir. The celebrant is the prior, the Very Reverend Father Albert Knebel, and the service is introduced by the sub-prior, the Reverend Father Gregor Hammes, who also gives the homily. The responsory after the reading is O Verdissima Virga, O Greenest Branch, by Hildegard of Bingen, and the Magnificat is a plain song setting on the eighth tone with organ versets by the German Baroque composer Johann Fischer. The anthem is Selig sind der Toten, Blessed are the Dead, by Heinrich Schütz. The service opens now with an introit by Orland de Lassus, Justorum Animae. The souls of the righteous are in the hands of God, and there shall no torment touch them.
Welcome to Neresheim Abbey in rural southern Germany. This Benedictine monastery is more than 900 years old, and its 18th century abbey church, designed by Balthasar Neumann, is regarded as one of the outstanding churches of the late Baroque. This year, students and professors from the Royal Academy of Music in London are again spending a one-week residency here, as they have done annually since 1991, contributing choral and organ music to our daily monastic liturgies. Today, you join us in a celebration of Vespers for the feast of St. Hildegard of Bingen, Abbess and Doctor of the Church. We begin by invoking God to come to our assistance and continue with Psalms 110, 113, 122, and 117.
Deus in adiutorium meum intendet.